Weekly Spooky is brought to you by our generous supporters on Patreon. Get access to exclusive podcasts, videos, and more for as little as $1 a month when you go to weeklyspooky.com and click on the Patreon link. Your support has gotten us to 100 episodes, so join up today and help us create another 100 and beyond. Head over to weeklyspooky.com and join the Patreon.
Scared. Come with me. You will experience tales of horror, ghosts, and death. It is not recommended for the weak at heart. Listen in the dark. It's more fun that way. This is Weekly Spooky.
Hello, my friends. It's Wednesday, and that means it's time for a little spooky in your weekly. I'm your host and narrator, Henrik Kuto, and we have quite a bit of down-home country horror for you this week. It's a story about small-town clashes and unlikely bedfellows. And we'll get to that in just a moment, but first I want to say, if you're enjoying the spooky, oh, we have so much for you guys coming right up. Next week, we have a very special Thanksgiving episode brought to you by our good friend Rob Fields, who's going to take us to Strickfield for the holidays. Then you can look forward to an entire month of holiday-themed horrors all through December, ending with a very terrifying New Year's Eve story. So if you haven't already, please subscribe to us on your favorite podcast app. And while you're there, leave us a review. It really helps out. It makes people who are on the fence decide to join us in our darkness. And I can't thank you enough. And for all of you who have discovered us in October, thanks for sticking around. Because here, Halloween never truly ends. Speaking of the weather getting cold, head over to weeklyspooky.com and click on Store, where you'll discover brand new limited edition merchandise to help keep you warm through a very long, cold, and scary winter. We just released a very comfortable, very cozy fleece sweatshirt with a screaming skull wearing a Santa hat in an ugly Christmas sweater style that, frankly, you need. And you know you do. And that's at weeklyspooky.com. Click on Store. And while you're there, maybe scope out our Patreon or send us a tip or an email at weeklyspooky@gmail.com. We love to hear from you. But now, my friends, it's time to head to the Dirty South after a quick word from today's sponsor. This episode is brought to you by Babysitter Massacre, Daddy's Little Killer, available on Amazon.com in ebook, paperback, and audiobook. A good babysitter is hard to find, especially when they're all dead. Larkin's first night with the Babysitter's Club has her filling in for a friend that's blowing off work for a hot date. The simple little lie will have dire consequences that trigger a series of unthinkable events and spurs a killer's need for revenge. With the bodies and suspects stacking up, can Larkin unmask the Kohler slasher? Or will she become another victim of Daddy's Little Killer? From the twisted mind of Weekly Spooky writer David O'Hanlon comes the first book in the Babysitter Massacre franchise series created by me. So check it out right now. Babysitter Massacre, Daddy's Little Killer. Available on ebook, paperback, and now audiobook at Amazon.com. Valley Rat by Charles Campbell. What exactly is a valley rat? The first prerequisite for being a valley rat is that you live in one of the tiny towns along the length of road, Highway 421. The second prerequisite for being a valley rat is that you've struggled in life without realizing it. Hot dogs on loaf bread, Vienna sausages and soda crackers, bare feet and sand spurs, stealing kisses from a little girl you like before she pops you in the nose because valley girls were tough.
You grin back with a bloody nose because it was worth it. Valley rats are mostly kind-hearted, but some have mean streaks, and a few are downright cruel. This story is about what happens when a kind-hearted valley rat crossed paths with a particularly cruel valley rat. It started one hot summer day in 1981 at the Minute Shop. Charles Proser was behind the counter watching the kids flip through the comics. Dusty Turner walked in, covered in dirt from head to foot. He looked like he was wrestling in a pig pen. "Dang, Dusty, what'd you get yourself into?" Charles asked from behind the counter. "I got in a fight with one of the Elliot boys," Dusty replied. His filthy t-shirt was ripped at the collar, and the beginnings of a good shiner circled his right eye. "Just one? Was it Jesse or Johnny?" Charles asked as a grin crept across his face. "Well, before he was done, it was both of them," Dusty answered. "That's what I figured. Them boys go everywhere together. Let me guess. You started whooping on one of them pretty good, and the other jumped in. That about the size of it?" "Yes, sir, but I beat the snot out of Jesse before Johnny jumped in, and he didn't jump in wholehearted, I can tell you that. They ripped my shirt, and Johnny popped me in the eye first thing. He ain't too bad off, but Jesse probably had to go in the house and lay down," Dusty finished with a grin of his own. "That's good. Them boys ain't nothing but trouble. Glad you handled yourself, Dusty. It'll make them think twice before they mess with you again. Pick yourself a free comic," Charles said in total admiration of the boy. "Thank you, Mr. Proser." Dusty beamed and joined the other kids at the comic rack. He grabbed the first Batman comic he could get his hands on. "This is the one, Mr. Proser," Dusty said, and held the comic in the air. Charles didn't speak, but nodded as Dusty smiled. The next person to walk into the store was a Burnett Town police officer named Margie Ersey. Margie's look was solemn, and her attention was immediately on Dusty. "Dusty, you get in a scrap with Jesse a little while ago?" she asked. There was concern in her face with her furrowed brow and serious demeanor. "Yeah? He started with me, though, I promise. Johnny jumped me, too. I was just taking up for myself," Dusty said. He felt just by the look of things that he may not be going straight home when he left the Minute Shop. "Well, I'm sorry to break the news to you like this, but Jesse's dead. He fell to the floor when he got back to their trailer and he didn't make it. His brother said you killed him when the ambulance got there." "Now wait a minute," Charles Proser started in Dusty's defense. "You know them Elliot boys. Both of them valley rats. Both of them always up to their ears in trouble. You know as well as I do that Dusty was just defending himself, and if the boy got the worst of it and paid the ultimate price for it, then it's on him," Charles said. He was firm with it when he locked eyes with Margie. "Look, Charles, I'm not saying you're wrong, but the fact of the matter is that that boy is dead, and Dusty..." She turned to face the boy, still clutching his Batman comic. "Yes, ma'am," he replied. "You're going to have to come with me to the precinct. We'll call your mama when we get there," Margie said and motioned toward the door. Dusty walked out the door with Margie right behind. Charles Proser was shaking his head behind the counter. As soon as Dusty stepped outside, he felt the stone crack against his forehead. It broke skin and the blood flowed down his nose just before the next rock cracked him in his right cheek. It was Johnny Elliott and his valley-famous homemade slingshot. Johnny was deadly with that thing. Many squirrels and a few cats fell to his aim. Margie saw Johnny and turned to holler for him to stop when the rock popped her in the left eye. She would lose it later on the operating table. Margie fell to her knees.
"Come on, Dusty! You killed my brother! There's only one way this is gonna go!"
Johnny screamed from Addie's gas station across the street. Dusty was pawing at his bloody forehead. Charles Proser came running out of the Minute Shop with his Remington pump. Johnny pinged Charles on his shoulder, causing him to drop the shotgun.
"You get down to Caver Park, Dusty. We're gonna finish this thing there. You get there by 3 o'clock or I'll come and find you," Johnny shouted before disappearing behind the gas station.
With Margie still on her knees and Charles bending over to pick up the shotgun, Dusty took off toward Addie's. Johnny already disappeared in the woods behind the station, and Dusty knew it was useless trying to follow the boy. Johnny knew those woods better than anybody, now that his brother was deceased. Dusty couldn't believe that Jesse was dead. Sure, they were in a good scrap and Dusty got some good licks in, but he'd seen Jesse in bigger and dirtier fights than what they had. It didn't make sense to Dusty, but the words of Johnny echoed in his mind. "You get down to Caver Park, Dusty." He wondered if Margie heard the challenge. Probably not. An approaching siren snapped Dusty out of his thoughts. It had to be coming for Margie. He didn't know if Johnny meant to hit her square in the eye, but he sure did, and Dusty knew it wasn't anything she could rinse out with water. A glass eye or a pirate patch was in Maggie's future. Dusty looked down and realized he was still clutching the Batman comic in his hand. He tossed it on the ground and stayed under the cover of woods, but close enough to 421 so he could hear the cars zoom by. He'd start heading to Caver. He was going to keep his date with Johnny. He just didn't know what he was going to do when he got there. Would he have to kill the other Valley Rat too? Dusty walked a couple of miles. The blood had dried on his face and forehead. He was thirsty as all get out, and the back of the convenience store called Balls stood out like an oasis in the desert. Dusty rummaged through his front pockets and pulled out all the change that he had. Dusty stared at his palm and counted 78 cents. That was enough for a Coca-Cola. He stepped into the shop and heard the distinct accent of Venkat Jagannathan, the owner and operator of this establishment. "Hello, Dusty," Venkat said when Dusty entered the store. "Hey, Mr. Venkat, just need a Coca-Cola. Dusty, you don't look well. Are you all right?" "I'm fine, Mr. Venkat. It was a bike accident." Seeming convinced, Venkat dropped it and took two quarters from the rough-looking boy. Dusty took long gulps, and the 12-ounce can was empty in seconds. He was even thirstier than he thought. Dusty could see the sign for Harrison Caver Park at the top of the hill. Dusty sighed and continued his walk. Whatever happens was going to happen anyway, is what he kept telling himself. He wasn't going to his mama or the police. This was between two Valley Rats, and it would be settled between two Valley Rats. It was 2:45 when Dusty made his way onto the walking track at Caver Park. There was no sign of Johnny, and Dusty felt a bit of relief. He figured the Burnettown PD was looking for both of them by now. Margie was in an operating room at Aiken Regional at that very moment, having her eye plucked out. Dusty walked toward the back of the park where the short nature trail began. There was a tiny man-made creek that ran through to Langley Pond. Dusty figured Johnny would come through that way. Less eyes to spot him, so Dusty would be right out in the open for him to see that he wasn't running. He wasn't hiding. He would fight to the death, if that's what it took. What happened to Jesse was a shame, but it was Jesse's fault. Dusty saw him strolling towards him, traveling right beside the creek, as he suspected. Johnny was whistling, but it wasn't just any whistle. Dusty recognized it immediately as the whistle that he heard in an old Eastwood spaghetti western. "I'm here, Johnny!" Dusty yelled in Johnny's direction. "I see that," Johnny replied with a serpent's grin. "You better drop that slingshot on the ground. I'm here with these." Dusty raised his fists. Johnny held the slingshot up in the air and tossed it. Dusty could hear it splash into the creek. This made Dusty feel a bit better. He was confident he could whoop Johnny one-on-one. Johnny's grin is what turned Dusty's confidence into hesitance. Johnny began running toward him, and Dusty took a fighter stance, left foot out front, fists in front of his face, ready to pop a jab when Johnny's face got close enough. Johnny was within reach, and Dusty popped the jab. Surprisingly, it didn't connect. Johnny ducked the jab and slashed at Dusty's belly with the concealed switchblade. Dusty didn't feel it, at first. He spun to try to catch Johnny with the left hook, and he missed again. Johnny sliced him across the cheek. That's when Dusty felt the pain in his gut.
You didn't think I was that fast, did you, Big Dust? Johnny asked as he stepped back to admire his work.
To tell you the truth?
No, I didn't.
Dusty held his stomach as he felt the blood pouring from the wound.
I should have known you wouldn't do this straight up, Dusty said, and continued. I didn't mean for your brother to die, Johnny. That's the God honest truth.
Dusty? Johnny started with that same grin. Just so you know, before I kill you, you didn't kill Jesse. Johnny ran his fingers through his buzz cut and continued. I killed Jesse.
Wait, what?
Dusty was puzzled. The fire in his gut was raging now.
Yeah, I killed him. Jesse was always the pussy. Now you ain't no pussy. I always had to jump in on his fights. He never had to jump in on mine, and I'd be embarrassed if he did. Jesse was a crybaby, and Big Dust, you gave me the out I needed. You beat the bejesus out of him, I'll give you that. Might have busted a couple of his ribs. He was holding his side and whining like a little bitch when he was walking back home. Well, I went ahead and finished him off. I cracked him in the back of the head with an axe handle, and we both know who I said did it, Big Dust. I was helping my brother. I mean, you were wailing on him when I walked up on y'all, and you cracked him in the back of the head before I put that shiner on you.
Johnny finished proudly.
You killed your own brother?
Dusty asked, clearly flabbergasted. Nobody ever saw Jesse without Johnny. They seemed like two peas in a pod.
Yeah. And now I'm gonna kill you. And it ain't gonna be no secret. You think they'll put me away for killing the one that killed my brother?
Dusty felt anger. This valley rat was going to kill him and tell the world he was a murderer. Dusty blocked out the pain and got back in his fighting stance.
Well, Johnny, you done cut me. You gonna be a pussy now and not face me straight up? You see the blood on my hands? I might bleed out before it's over, but I ain't hiding behind a knife. Let's do this, pussy boy.
Dusty snarled and held his fists in front of him. With his manhood challenged, the valley pride within Johnny came to the forefront. He tossed the knife into the creek and charged Dusty. His intent was to bear tackle him and get the wounded boy on the ground. Instead, he got a straight right hand to the bridge of the nose. Johnny saw stars and dropped to his knees. Dusty kicked him in the face, and Johnny rolled down into the shallow creek. Dusty was right behind him, still ignoring the pain from his gushing wound. Dusty grabbed Johnny by the back of his head before he could rise from the creek. With the full weight of his body on Johnny's back, he held Johnny's head under the water. Johnny bucked underneath, but Dusty's grip was firm, and he had the full advantage of weight on his side. He was going to kill this valley vermin, and he would just have to explain what happened later. Everybody knew Jesse and Johnny were scum of the earth. There was a noise in the air that Dusty didn't register. His focus was making sure Johnny was dead before he lost consciousness from blood loss.
Crack!
Dusty fell with a splash. Johnny jumped from the creek, holding his neck and gasping for air. He was on the brink of filling his lungs with water, and that would have sent him on his way. Dusty lay still in the creek bed. The bullet went through his back and straight through the center of his heart. Charles Prosser stood at the top of the hill, his dirty Harry style 357 Magnum now at his side. Johnny saw him and took off through the woods. Charles didn't want to kill Dusty, but there was one thing that neither Jesse nor Johnny knew. Their last names should be Prosser. Their mother, Jessica, had a one-night stand with Charles after a night of drinking at Glenda's, and Charles did the math. It was right at 9 months later when the boys came. While Frank Elliott's name was on their birth certificates, Charles and Jessica both knew whose boys they really were. Charles could see his eyes in theirs, and it made his stomach turn every time he saw them. He wasn't proud at all of the valley rats that they were turning into. He'd heard Johnny yell out to Dusty back at the minute shop. He knew they'd be here. He'd let them fight, but if things weren't going Johnny's way, he'd jump in and save his last surviving son. He would never tell Johnny why he saved him, and Johnny would avoid Charles through the years. Johnny would be questioned about Dusty's death, but they wouldn't find a .357 in Johnny's possession, or dumped in the creek. Without that, they couldn't make anything stick. Valley rats keep things between valley rats, especially in the matters of life and death.
That's the thing about small towns. They often contain big secrets. Huge thanks to our author today, Charles Campbell. Check out Charles at valleyboypublications.com. He has a brand new book called Midnight Rider available now on paperback, and I think you guys would enjoy it. I love when a story is quick and to the point, but don't get too comfortable, because next week we have a big, terrifying tale all about Thanksgiving. And I guarantee you, that's not cranberry sauce. Thank you so much for listening. I really do appreciate it. And if you get a chance, go to weeklyspooky.com and click on Patreon, because Patreon is the number one way we keep the show going every single week. For as little as $1 a month, you can help us keep the spooky rolling on the weekly and get exclusive content, photos, short films, and so much more. I want to say a huge thank you to all the folks who have joined the Patreon this November. We're really growing it. It's at the highest it's ever been, and I would love to have your help to grow it even more. The support really, truly means the world to me. And I want to take a moment to especially thank our Patreon podcast boosters, folks who contribute just a little bit more to hear their name on the show. Gino Lyons, Karen Wiemet, Jack Kerr, Jeff and George Hilton, Craig Cohen, Rob Fields, and Kevin Fry. Thank you all so much. And please don't forget, we're cooking up some big surprises, including another terrifying short film for the holiday season coming right up, baby. So stick around. We've got a lot more cool stuff to come, a lot more scares to throw your way. But for now, for my producer Dan Wilder and my composer Ray Mattis, I will talk at you later.
Thank you for listening. Make sure to find your way back next week. But for now, you are safe. Trust me. Ha 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 ha!